This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is an iHeart Original.
So I was really intrigued by the idea of MySpace and the sense of community it had. I was way too young to use it back then. I was like 3 or 4 years old. I really liked the idea of this platform where everyone could express their creativity, because one of the main selling points of MySpace was that people could create their own layouts, could customize their profiles as much as they wanted, and basically turn their profile into their own space on the internet.
I'm Joanne McNeil, and this is Main Accounts, the story of MySpace. Episode 8, MySpace Forever. In April of this year, 2023, I did something that I haven't done in well over a decade. I tried to log into MySpace. I reset my password, logged into a Yahoo account that I also haven't accessed in ages, and there I was. I'm right now typing myspace.com into my web browser. That's Chrome. There's a headline here. It says Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nine Inch Nails, Slipknot, and Kiss to headline Louder Than Life lineup. And this is dated March 9th, 2022. It's a Spin magazine piece. So not super recent, but not as far back as 2008. On the front page were music-related news stories from 2022. Interestingly enough, the first thing I see when I click on the tab People is sign in with your Facebook account to find friends who are already on MySpace. That was definitely not the case in 2008. In fact, I feel like MySpace was very much trying the opposite of this in 2008. I see a few musicians under Discover People. One is Sam Smith. I'm going to click on Sam Smith's page. And okay, it says he's based in London, England. Personal site is samsmithworld.com. Looks like he added a video in November of 2015. So yeah, this is almost a decade ago. There was a list of featured artists and musicians. One of them was Avril Lavigne, who, according to her MySpace profile, had a new album out. I looked up that new album, and it was released in 2013. But it wasn't just musicians who I found there fossilized in amber. I saw old friends and pictures of them from 2006 or 2007. There wasn't much, and the site was difficult to navigate. Most of what I saw were broken links. images that fail to load, gaps in profiles where there might have been media players or testimonials before. It wasn't a journey to the past, because so much is missing now. With little of my own MySpace content to excavate, I decided instead to try to find people who use MySpace to this day. Who are they? I figured there had to be someone using it like a social network in 2023, right? I mean, it works. You can log in, you can add friends. Someone in the world has to be doing that right now. No? There's an option to search for men and women. I'm just going to put it from 33 to 43. See if anyone shows up here. Here's an actor named Claire. And I'm going to her page. She has 9 connections and 900 friends. I'm going to see about trying to add her as a friend. This is definitely confusing. I don't even know how to add her as a friend. This is really tricky. It's not the easiest site to navigate. Not that that's a huge surprise, but I'm just looking for other people like me who are in Los Angeles. I'm just going to search this whole thing, 18 to 50, and see who pops up. I really had to dig to find someone active on the site. Eventually, I found someone hanging around Jimmy Kimmel's page. At some point, Jimmy Kimmel got verified on MySpace. This guy who goes by K-Rock Ken left Jimmy a bunch of testimonials that seemed relatively recent. There's some guy called K-Rock Ken, and he left a post for him that says, "Kimmel, we miss your daily posts on here. Kevin and Bean love you." I'm going to click on K-Rock Ken, because if he misses Jimmy Kimmel in 2016, that means he was like hanging out here at some point. I might even send K-Rock Ken a message if I can figure out how to do that. Or if I could figure out how to leave a testimonial for him. I don't see anywhere to message him at all. This is so confusing. I'm on K-Rock Ken's page. He's definitely active on here. He's got 1 million connections, 86,000 people connected to him. He's had some kind of posts on his site. I think it's a Twitter connection. Like, maybe his tweets automatically... Okay, that's what it is. His tweets automatically show up on his MySpace page. So it looks like he's super active on Twitter. And that means he has like a bunch of updates to his page in the past... the past couple weeks. K-Rock Ken was another dead end. Anyone who seemed active on MySpace was cross-posting material there from another platform like Twitter. So how did this happen? How did MySpace go from the number one website in America to this hall of mirrors and broken links? As we will find out in this episode, there were a number of factors that contributed to MySpace's demise. Factor number one, the News Corp deal.
Silicon Valley is buzzing about whether Rupert Murdoch will dump MySpace or not. But even if he does, will it help the stock?
One of the biggest things about Murdoch's purchase of MySpace was that it was actually a signal to the rest of traditional media that you could do that kind of thing. It was a bold move because the other media companies were scared.
That's Julia Angwin, the author of Stealing MySpace, The Battle to Control the Most Popular Website in America,
They've been burned by their acquisitions during the dot-com boom, and no one was moving in this space. And Murdoch's acquisition of MySpace was really the first big purchase. At the time, it's so funny because it was $600 million. And at the time, everyone was like, oh my God, he spent so much. Now, of course, all these tech acquisitions are always in the billions. And so that just seems like nothing. But everyone thought, it's so bold. He's being so aggressive. Oh my God, Murdoch, maybe he's going to lose his shirt. But it did actually encourage others to move into that space and follow his lead.
And the deal was a disaster. 6 years after News Corp acquired MySpace, it put the company back on sale again. Justin Timberlake, of all people, along with a company called Specific Media, bought it from News Corp. So yes, at one point in MySpace's long afterlife, Justin Timberlake was the owner of MySpace. The fact that not too many people know this bit of trivia about MySpace kind of tells you how well Timberlake and company did reviving the social network in the 20-teens. Time Inc. acquired MySpace in 2016. It was reported that the company valued MySpace for its old user data. More on that in a bit. In its current capacity, barely functioning, full of dead links, MySpace is the property of an advertising company called Viant Technology. Factors 2 and 3, which explain MySpace's demise, go hand in hand. Factor 2, the rise of smartphones. When MySpace launched, broadband was swiftly overtaking dial-up. Suddenly, the internet was fast, and you could quickly exchange music and images. But then there was another big shift with smartphones. People had access to the internet 24/7. The internet was with you, in your pocket. The next factor, factor 3, the global financial crisis in the late aughts, was a period in which investors pumped money into Silicon Valley. Any post-dot-com crash fears that this was a risky bet were quelled by the landscape. It was assumed by many that the tech sector couldn't plausibly be any riskier than real estate or banking in 2008. Startups, flush with cash, made a play for social media. Companies were taking off left and right. Companies like Twitter, Instagram, Foursquare, and Tumblr. And each was suited for this era of smartphones. You could post pictures to Instagram while walking the dog, tweet from the airport. MySpace was made for an internet you accessed from a stationary computer in your home. It didn't have a mobile strategy to speak of. Its vernacular of testimonials and favorite bands you list in your profile all felt antiquated. And that brings us to factor number 4. Facebook.
And we take Facebook seriously, and it's not a head-on fight. I think a lot of people are on both.
Maybe it was never a head-on fight, as Rupert Murdoch put it back in 2008. But one of the two was clearly the victor. More on how Facebook came to dominate social media after the break.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Over the course of this series, I aim to show how diverse MySpace was. So many people from so many walks of life were on it. What was unifying about the MySpace experience was that these users tended to be very young. Facebook users were also very young at first. Facebook was limited to Harvard students when it launched. Then the social network selectively opened the gates to students at other elite colleges. The earliest Facebook users were set to be the ruling class, future Nobel Prize winners, future senators and diplomats, future presidents, future Academy Award winners, the good kids. Meanwhile, you'd open up the New York Times and see someone compare MySpace to a trailer park. Michael Wolff, who wrote a biography of Rupert Murdoch, was quoted saying that, in his words, nobody who has beyond an eighth grade education is on MySpace, and that Murdoch acquired it in order to capitalize on the rising lower class. I've seen a few academics discuss the transition from MySpace to Facebook as digital white flight, but I think this analysis is incomplete. Because MySpace users were stigmatized, and Facebook profited off that stigma. MySpace was the stranger danger platform. Meanwhile, Facebook branded itself with its ties to a school that any helicopter parent hopes to send their kids one day.
Yeah, MySpace really sort of became the focus of this concern about predators using social network platforms to find victims. But the reality is it was happening across the industry, right? This was also happening at Craigslist. People were placing ads to meet other people, and there were terrible things and murders that happened as a result. This happened with, it happened a little bit less with Facebook because people used their real names. And at this time, Facebook was pretty much limited to Ivy League institutions. So there was less that, at least I know of, that happened like that.
That's Julia Angwin, author of Stealing MySpace.
All platforms where you can basically meet people and you don't know who they really are face this problem. But MySpace was just the biggest because they had such wild success and grew so fast. And their target market was really young girls. The people who loved decorating their pages were teenage girls who previously used that energy to decorate their lockers so people could make them all different colors and they could be shiny and glittery and they could have be blinking lights and all that stuff. And Facebook was like this really boring place where it was like white and blue and you couldn't do anything to your profile. And it was very much, it was at that time for only Ivy League kids. And it was definitely like Facebook was the bookstore. It was like the clean, well-lighted place for books. And MySpace was the nightclub.
Nowadays, we associate Facebook with data harvesting and surveillance-based advertising. But when Facebook first launched, that really wasn't the case.
Facebook wasn't doing that at that time. They didn't start their ad business till after MySpace did. MySpace really started this business of letting advertisers buy different segments.
Some context on that point that Julia made. There was a story in the New York Times in 2007 that showed a glimpse of the era of surveillance capitalism soon to come, and it was all about MySpace. The headline was, MySpace Mines Data to Tailor Advertising. The reporter Brad Stone noted that MySpace can tailor ads to the personal information that its 110 million active users leave on their profile pages. MySpace had algorithms that scan users' pages for the purpose of what they called interest-based targeting. So users would get filtered into categories like sports or fashion, and they'd see ads related to these campaigns. But these algorithms evidently weren't all that advanced or accurate. The story revealed that 200 temporary workers, which MySpace called relevance testers, would come into the MySpace offices and manually check user profiles to see if they were filtered correctly into these categories. Several years later, people are now more aware of the harm that can come from targeted ads because of scandals ranging from digital redlining to Cambridge Analytica. But in 2007, when the story ran, few might have predicted how pervasive and abusive targeted ads would soon become.
I do think that I didn't quite understand how A, invasive this privacy was going to be, and B, how profitable it was going to be.
And just so I'm following you correctly, would you say that MySpace, had it succeeded, would it be, you know, a monster of targeted ads no less than Facebook and Google today? I mean, was it on track to do that kind of, to be that kind of business?
Yeah, I think that it would have been, MySpace had the potential to be as big as Facebook in its ability to deliver targeted ads and be, you know, Facebook is really the place. If you're a small business and you don't have a huge advertising budget, it's really the best place to go is Facebook, because you just go and you're like, okay, my business is in Berkeley, California, so I'll target Berkeley residents. I want this age. I want this. They're interested in flowers, and I have a flower shop. MySpace had a different model. So they allowed anonymity, so they were always going to have a slightly less in-depth look at their users. But they did have so much information about everyone's interests. And so if they had continued their growth, they could have probably been a Facebook-sized operation. But when I was writing about MySpace, there wasn't really a sense that this wasn't an interesting or creepy world of selling user data. It wasn't until I basically went back and started this series on privacy that people started to think about it as creepier.
Yeah, and now that data has come back to haunt users in a way, because with the issue of how Time Inc. bought MySpace in 2016, and the old user data was cited as the reason that they would even want it. So I'm kind of curious, like, what is this old data even worth to data brokers and advertisers? Like, what's going on there?
It's so interesting, right? The shady world of data brokers and how they buy up these sort of like what I call zombie websites, you know, because websites never really die. They just sort of stay online. You know, Tumblr is still there. MySpace is still there. But like, they're sort of like not being tended to, you know, and that means that there's still a lot of user data. There's the user logins and this and that, but there's also just user behavior. And in a world where user behavior data is hard to find and is really valuable, people buy it. And the reason it's valuable is because the world, the online world these days is really powered by algorithms and algorithms that can predict user behavior, right? Very specifically, the main financial driver of most internet websites is advertising. And advertisers want to know who people are and what they're going to do in the future. And very specifically, are they going to buy my shoes in the future, right? And so basically anyone who can come up with a bucket of data and make some predictions can compete in this market. And so there are all sorts of people out there buying sort of these data troves. Now, one that is old and stale, like MySpace, is probably doesn't go for as much as a fresher and better data source, but you know, there are hundreds of these companies out there, and so somebody is going to buy it.
MySpace, with what little of it exists today, has tried to catch up on data mining, like more robust big tech social media platforms. That's probably why logging into the site in 2023 is not a fun time. What people are nostalgic for is something they can't find on MySpace.com. the energy and excitement that was there in the aughts. After the break, we'll meet someone trying to revive that energy.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'd love to talk to Tom one day. It's one of my heroes, I think.
That's Anton Rom. He's the founder of a MySpace clone called SpaceHey, and he's 20 years old.
I spent hours when developing SpaceHey on archive.org and on YouTube, watching old videos and screencasts of MySpace and checked how MySpace looked back then. But I only saw a few aspects of MySpace, mainly the homepage and some profiles, but I couldn't really get the whole feeling for it because, yeah, I could only see screenshots. I couldn't interact and feel how MySpace was back then. So the main things, how I implemented and developed SpaceHey, were by just imagining, okay, the design is the one thing, but also how this platform should feel, how this platform should work in the background. I just imagined how it could be with MySpace and what are things that I don't currently like about modern social media, and put that all together and basically develop something new.
SpaceHey looks like MySpace, as you might remember it. It was a sense of community that drew Anton to build a clone of it. He feels like current offerings don't give users the same possibilities as they had on MySpace.
So I was really intrigued by the idea of MySpace and the sense of community it had back then. I was way too young to use it back then. I was 3 or 4 years old. I really liked the idea of this platform where everyone could express their creativity, because one of the main selling points of MySpace was that people could create their own layouts, could customize their profiles as much as they wanted, and basically turn their profile into their own space on the internet. And I looked around online a bit and found that there's no platform quite like it nowadays. So if you look at modern social media like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, I think that most profiles basically look the same. Sure, you could customize your name and your profile pic and your posts, but that's basically it. And I really like the idea of giving people back the freedom of customizing everything on a social network. And that's why when I had the idea to basically recreate MySpace for the modern era and for a new generation, so people could both relive those MySpace days now, but also rediscover it like me, myself, because I haven't experienced it. That's how SpaceHey came to be. I basically coded for 2-3 weeks straight and shared my progress on social media, and people really liked it. So yeah, I didn't think it would become so big, but now 1.5 years later, it has over 500,000 users, and it's quite exciting to see how many people love to relive the MySpace days.
Anton got a lot of interest early on. People were excited, and it was a mix of people who had been on MySpace and missed it, and people like Anton, who were too young to experience it, not even born yet, perhaps, but heard about it and thought it sounded like a fun time.
Technically, I don't track much about the users' data, because I try to be as privacy friendly as possible. But by just looking at the profiles which pop up, I can see that there are all kinds of people on Spacer with all kinds of interests and all groups of ages. For example, I see a lot of people who, personally message me and say, wow, thank you so much for recreating MySpace, because they were kind of big on MySpace back then with hundreds of thousands of friends. But there are also lots of teens like me who say, wow, they also heard about MySpace from social media nowadays, but couldn't really think about what it was back then. And they're really happy to re-experience it and get the chance to like experience this for the first time. And that's a really fascinating thing to see, because it's really a mix of old and young.
People enjoy the experience of a social network without algorithms directing you to see viral content or not. And the absence of a timeline is also striking.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating because there's no timeline or anything on Space, similar to MySpace. So they can't just get thrown in. They have to friend people. And also you can't just follow people, but you have to send a request and they have to accept it, and it's mutual. So that's really interesting, because that way they're like way different bonds, I think, between the people, and it's much more personal and honest. And that's what I really, really like, because it's exciting to see so many people get together and become some even real-time, real-life friends on such a platform. And it's much more personal than, say, YouTube or Twitter or Instagram.
And how do you feel about the sustainability of these communities? Like with most social media, it was built to scale and make a lot of money through advertising. And how do you kind of intend to preserve that simplicity, if that's the right word, of connections that you have right now on the platform?
Yeah, that's one of the main challenges right now, because I don't want to like put personalized advertisements or anything on Space, because I really don't want to track anything about my users, because I think that's a way, much more better way for the future of social media to not be privacy invasive and just sell all the data which gets tracked to advertisers. So that's a challenge right now. I'm trying to do like general sponsorship or something with brand to get some money to run Space. But also one huge point right now is that I'm selling stickers of the Space logo. So people who like Space can support me by naming their own price, and I'll send them personally some stickers for them. But that's the main funding way right now. But it's one of the challenges to keep it running in the long run. Because as more and more people join Space, now over 500,000, which is incredible, the costs for servers and stuff goes up as well. So that's the main thing I have to think about right now, but it's only me working on it. We'll see. But it's true, it's a challenge to get even some companies to talk to me with advertising with non-personalized ads.
Anton with Space Hey is coming upon the issue that every social network has to grapple with, that of scale. There is no example in the history of the internet of a social network that is massively adopted without consequences, which means there are a number of companies that we at Main Accounts could devote our attention to, as we did this season on MySpace. Thank you to all of our guests for sharing their experiences with us. And thank you to our listeners. I'd love to hear from you as I get started on season 2 of Main Accounts. Is there a tech company or platform that you remember well from years ago? Tumblr, Neopets, AOL, or something else? I'd love to hear your stories. You can reach me at JoeMick on Twitter. Twitter appears to be still around, at least this week. But who knows? That might be the subject of our season 3 investigation. In any case, thank you for listening. This has been Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, an iHeart original podcast. Thanks for listening to Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, an iHeart original podcast. Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, is written and hosted by me, Joanne McNeil. Editing and sound design by Mike Coscarelli and Mary Dew. Original music by Elise McCoy. Mixing and mastering by Josh Fisher. Research and fact-checking by Austin Thompson, Jocelyn Sears, and Marissa Brown. Show logo by Lucy Quintanilla. Special thanks to Ryan Murdoch, Grace Views, and Bahid Frazier. Our associate producer is Lauren Phillip. Our senior producer is Mike Coscarelli. And our executive producer is Jason English. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. Sadly, my MySpace page is no longer around, but you can find me on Twitter at Joe Mick. Let us hear your MySpace story. And check out my book, Lurking. Main Accounts, The Story of MySpace, is a production of iHeart Podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.